I'm Richard van der Berg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 163 for the weekend starting 13 January 2017.
2017. Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, the home of South Africa's best technology journalism.
On Talk Central this week, is WhatsApp really as secure as Facebook claims it is? Perhaps not.
Also this week, Norway to switch off FM radio. But what about South Africa? Cell C jacks up its prices.
No.
And the iPhone turns 10. Can you believe it?
Let's get the engine started.
Well, welcome to the show. How's it, Richard?
And welcome. Happy New Year, Duncan.
Happy New Year to you as well. I hope it's going to be a good one. I'm sure it will be.
Yeah,
after the dog show that was 2016.
Yeah, let's. I think the way this year started, it's a bit somber, but I think we're in for a good one.
It's been a bit of a slow news start to the year. Of course, there's always CES to keep us busy, but
CES was good.
Yeah. It was quite a bit this year, wasn't there? But before we get to all of that, let's do our quiz. Do you want to kick it off, Richard?
Yeah, sure. First question of the year: Yahoo, or what is left of it after the US assets are sold to Verizon, is being renamed to what?
And related to that, our second question, Yahoo's new name is a portmanteau of which two words?
Third question, South Africa's Department of Telecommunications and Postal Services has a new Director General. Who is he?
And again, related to that question, who was acting DG until the person who is the answer to question three took over?
A question within a question. Fifth question, Cell C this week announced it would hike tariffs on 1 February. What did it cite as the main reason for being forced to do so?
That's our quiz for this week, but let's get into the news, Richard, as the weather seems to close around us. Again, I remember, I think it was in November or early December last year, we recorded through one of the most spectacular storms in years, and yep. It's looking like it might do it again. So let's hope it holds off for the next half hour, yep, while we record the show. But let's get straight into it. And did you see this story from The Guardian that was broken this afternoon?
A little bit worrying.
Yeah, they had an exclusive piece. A very interesting article, and I think very worrying indeed, suggesting that there is a serious vulnerability in WhatsApp and that its end-to-end encryption is, in fact...
Not end-to-end.
They're citing information provided to them by a guy called Tobias Bolter, a cryptography and security researcher at the University of California, Berkeley. And he's saying that this vulnerability or backdoor, he's describing it as, in the WhatsApp messaging software, can be used by Facebook, which owns WhatsApp, of course, and by anyone else, including government agencies and spy agencies, to read people's messages. And this is a huge problem. And as The Guardian points out, a threat to freedom of speech. In that many people use WhatsApp to share, because of the end-to-end encryption, use it to share information that they don't want third parties to see, including journalists and their sources. I know a lot of people use Telegram because they perceive it as being the most secure way of communicating, I've certainly assumed that WhatsApp is secure to use and that your secrets won't be revealed unless someone gets hold of your phone.
But I mean, this is certainly not an omission code. This is clearly something that was built in to allow that access, right?
I mean, I'm not sure about that. It seems to be the way WhatsApp has implemented the technology. I think it's worth reading a couple of paragraphs from this Guardian story because it explains better than I can, perhaps trying to explain it myself, how exactly this works. But basically what they say is that WhatsApp's end-to-end encryption relies on the generation of unique security keys using the acclaimed Signal protocol developed by Open Whisper Systems that are traded and verified between users to guarantee communications are secure and cannot be intercepted by a middleman. However, WhatsApp has the ability to force the generation of new encryption keys for offline users, unbeknown to the sender and recipient of the messages, and to make the sender re-encrypt messages with new keys and send them again for any messages that have not been marked as delivered. The recipient is not made aware of this change in encryption, while the sender is only notified if they have opted in to encryption warnings in settings and only after the messages have been resent. This re-encryption and rebroadcasting effectively allows WhatsApp to intercept and read users' messages. So it's got to do with the fact that they're not disclosing If there's a problem with the communication of the message, it provides a more seamless experience for users in that messages that do get delivered, they don't get error messages saying your message wasn't delivered.
Sure,
but
sure.
They're also not telling consumers that new security keys have been issued and that this therefore creates a vulnerability. Now, according to the Guardian report, Tobias Bülter reported this matter to Facebook in April this year and has effectively been disregarded by the company. And he's now decided to take the matter public, and I'm sure Facebook is now scrambling to respond and to potentially, hopefully, to come up with a solution to this.
But again, it's a little bit worrying the fact that Facebook has been notified of this and they choose to not do anything about it.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to speculate, but you know, maybe it's a feature rather than an error.
Well, they say they know about it. I mean, they imply that they know about it. They said in response to the Guardian that in response to this security researcher rather that it was quote expected behavior end quote and wasn't actively being worked on.
If somebody knows how to exploit this,
yes,
then that's when it becomes a real issue for users of WhatsApp.
And because of this, WhatsApp/ Facebook cannot claim that this is a secure platform.
Mm.
Sure, there's end-to-end encryption in place, but the fact is that there's a problem.
There's a known vulnerability out in the world.
Yeah, and you can be sure that organizations like the NSA are going to take advantage of it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Not only the NSA, criminals, hackers, governments in countries where where the free flow of information is restricted and dissidents rely on the ability to encrypt their messages to avoid persecution by their own governments. It's a big worry, and I really hope Facebook fixes this problem.
Yeah, look, I mean, they're going to have to address this, because this is really a bad mark on their name if they continue to leave it as it is. It's like you said, this is opening it up wide open, anybody to exploit it.
It's worth just reading the response to The Guardian from a WhatsApp spokesperson, who said, "Over a billion people use WhatsApp today because it is simple, fast, reliable, and secure. At WhatsApp, we've always believed that people's conversations should be secure and private. Last year, we gave all our users a better level of security by making every message, photo, video, file, and call end-to-end encrypted by default. As we introduce features like end-to-end encryption, we focus on keeping the product simple and take into consideration how it's used every day around the world. In WhatsApp's implementation of the Signal protocol, we have a show security notifications setting option under settings account security that notifies you when a contact security code has changed. We know the most common reasons this happens are because someone has switched phones or reinstalled WhatsApp. This is because in many parts of the world, people frequently change devices and SIM cards. In these situations, we want to make sure people's messages are delivered, not lost in transit." So it sounds like the short-term solution is to, if you're worried about your communication, is to go to settings, account, and security.
Mm.
And then at least you'll know if the keys have been changed for any reason.
Yeah.
It's probably fair to say that the vast bulk of communication probably is not interceptable.
Mm.
But the fact that there is this vulnerability raises serious concern.
That also probably means if a high profile individual's phone gets stolen, the change of those keys also would mean anybody sending messages to that person would not know whether that's the real person on the other end or a malicious user trying to get access to those messages.
Mm.
Because of that question, it's difficult to then trust the encryption.
Anyway, we'll have to keep an eye on what Facebook says about this. I've got no doubt that they're going to issue some sort of statement in the coming days and that the story is going to run for a while. My hope is that Facebook responds and says they're going to fix it, close it, even if it means some inconvenience to
users. So for the record, then, we're just going to put our plans for world domination on hold,
Telegram.
Off WhatsApp, yeah.
we'll shift them to Telegram. You're just inviting someone to hack your WhatsApp, aren't you?
No, they can see all my notes to my wife. There's only shopping lists on there.
Anyway, Rechard, do you still listen to FM radio?
In my car, yes. Everywhere else, no.
You still listen in the car? Okay.
Yeah.
I still listen a bit in the car, but I'm mainly listening to streaming music and podcasts now. If I'm feeling lazy and I don't want to pick up my phone and find something to listen to, I'll just switch it onto the radio. I would say that two-thirds of my time in the car now, when I would have been listening to FM radio in the past, is now consumed with podcasts and streaming music, order, yeah. either through TuneIn Radio, funnily enough, mm-hmm. or more likely through Google Play Music. But I think FM still plays a role, especially when I need up-to-date information like a news bulletin. I'll tune into 702 and listen to the latest news. Or, if there's an interesting interview on in the evening on the business show, I might listen to that. Or if I just feel like listening to a bit of music, I like the DJ on the radio, I'll tune into Mix FM here in Joburg. I think they play quite good music. But I do listen to it a lot less than I used to. Now, Norway in Scandinavia has become the first country in the world to announce plans to switch off FM broadcasts. They're doing it in a staggered approach. I think the rural areas are getting switched off first, if I remember correctly, and then eventually Oslo will be switched off. But they were the first country in the world to do this because they're moving to digital audio broadcasting, or DAB. Mm. FM is an analog technology, I guess they're a bit unique in the rest of the world. There's a very interesting piece we ran from Bloomberg's on Tech Central this week, actually, about this, suggesting that Norway may be on its own in this, and that the rest of the world is actually quite happy with FM radio, especially as we move to streaming in the next few years, and as cars get connected. Many modern cars now have SIM cards integrated into them, and are basically an internet hotspot. And as we move more into the connected vehicle world, do we really need an alternative to FM broadcasts, or are we simply going to consume our entertainment through the internet, especially when the internet is integrated into the car stereo system, rather than having to fiddle with your phone to find something you want to listen to, which I must admit is a little bit of an inconvenience. Not much, but it's a little bit of inconvenience. It's a little more inconvenient than pressing a button on the dash to switch on a radio station.
I guess also data costs come into play in a country like South Africa.
Yeah, they do.
Where FM is still such a big part of the consumption market for radio.
Yeah,
I don't think. I mean, we can't even get digital broadcasting rights. I don't think we'll see this anytime soon.
No. We have had a trial on digital audio broadcasting in South Africa. There's no word yet on when commercial broadcasts might start.
Are the trials still happening?
I need to find that out, but my understanding is that the trial ended. I stand to be corrected, but there's been no progress, as I understand it, on the regulatory front in terms of issuing of any licenses or any word from ICASA on when a licensing process might take place. And I don't think there's any real urgency to do this either. Mm. I think the real focus is on getting the TV broadcasting digital first, and then maybe looking at it a bit later on. But we'll be speaking to the experts on that on an upcoming podcast, so listen out for that. We'll go into it in quite a bit of detail. But interesting that Norway switched it off. And I think I tend to agree with the Bloomberg piece that we carried this week, that there's no real urgency to switch off FM broadcasts, or really to launch DAB. In a way, it's a bit like Blu-ray never really took off in a massive way after DVD. It was never as popular as DVD. In part because people moved to streaming and downloads. And it's probably why a 4K Blu-ray format is probably never really going to take off, because 4K will get delivered over fiber. But it's an interesting one anyway, and there have been a number of developments in the local market, and I think that I personally would love to play around with DAB technology. You can buy the handsets or the receivers rather on Amazon or eBay or anywhere, and tune in. I must say I stand to be corrected on whether there are actually currently broadcasts happening. There might be, there might not be.
I'm sure the trials ended too, because I remember when we spoke about it initially, it was limited time that they were going to run it for.
There were two trials. Yeah, there was the DAB Plus trial, and then there was the DRM trial, Digital Radio Mondiale. And the DRM trial was DRM is a replacement in effect for AM radio. Quite different to AM though, in that there's no static, and you don't listen, if there's a thunderstorm in the area, you're not listening to snap, crackle, pop the whole time. It's crystal clear like FM radio. But interesting that Norway's switching off, but I don't think we're going to be doing that. I would strongly suspect that we'll still have FM broadcasts in South Africa 10 years from now.
Yeah, definitely.
Anyway, let's take a break at this moment. We'll be back right after this.
Hello world. Hello information. Hello uploads and downloads. Hello streaming videos and low latency. Hello blogs and vlogs. Hello crystal clear video calls. Hello increased productivity. Hello online learning. Hello cloud. Hello long lost friends and missed connections. Hello limitless possibilities and instant gratification. Say hello to premium high-speed fiber from Vox Telecom. Pleasure guaranteed. Visit voxtelecom.co.za for more information.
Chicken or beef? Chicken or beef?
Chicken.
There's so many companies offering fiber at the moment, but with Vox Telecom's premium high-speed fiber, you'll be joining the Smile High Club.
Duck or salmon, sir?
We call it business class fiber. We guarantee our uptime and can tailor our services to suit your needs and budget. Say hello to business class fiber from Vox Telecom. Visit voxtelecom.co.za for more information.
Welcome back to the show. Richard, Cell C is putting up its prices.
What?
Unexpected, I think.
And yeah, very.
Disappointing in a way, because Cell C has been, I think along with Telkom, has been the price challenger in this market against the big incumbents, MTN and Vodacom. And here they are announcing, actually quite significant in some cases, price increases. And I think they're blaming the weak rand and the resultant increase in network equipment costs for this as the main reason. They've also they mentioned several other reasons, including the fact that the government or the regulator has not allocated additional spectrum. But the main reason for the fall in the rand and the increasing cost in deploying network infrastructure, and I can believe it because Cell C is ramping up its network rollout. They're deploying LTE at an aggressive pace. In an effort to try and at least catch up to the LTE rollouts of MTN and Vodacom. So they're in a difficult position in that they need to make these network investments. I mean, MTN and Vodacom together last year spent 20 billion rand on their networks. I think Cell C was sitting at or made a commitment a year or two back of 8 billion rand over a period of 2 or 3 years, if I remember correctly. So They've got to make a lot of investment. I think the other challenge they're facing potentially, and I don't know if this specifically played a role in the price increases announced now, but obviously they're going to have shareholders to answer to soon, new shareholders in the form of Blue Label Telecoms, which itself is listed on the JSE, and which itself has a number or dozens, hundreds, thousands probably of shareholders that it has to answer to. So the pressure is probably growing on Cell C to report a sustainable profit. So there's prices going up, and some of those prices going up quite a bit. Cell C saying that they're still very competitive in relation to the bigger operators, but I mentioned on a radio show this week that I think that it's clear now that there is only one real price leader in the South African mobile market, and it is no longer Cell C after this, and it's Telkom.
Yeah, interestingly, who would have thought
Telkom being the price leader?
But Cell C always used to be, and we spoke about them often on this podcast, about, you know, kind of being the underdog and being kind of this entity that's able to, you know, do really innovative and interesting things. And I fear that has kind of come to an end now when Cell C customers are kind of hit with reality. And, you know, not everything is always great with the underdogs.
And Cell C has certainly faced a lot of difficulty over the years, and with this big restructuring that's going on there, and Blue Label Telecoms making an investment of 5.5 billion rand for 45% of the company, they're going to want a return on that money at some point.
Do you think that was part of it? I mean, obviously them having to push up their prices to be able to be more, you know,
I think it must have played, must have, you know, at the very least, I think it must have been at the back of their minds that they're going to have to deliver sustainable returns going forward. I mean, they've turned a profit at last, and I'm sure the new shareholders don't want to see them returning to a loss-making position. I've got no doubt that played a role in their thinking here. But I suspect the bigger issue is the fact that they're having to ramp up their network investment to keep pace with or to play catch up with Vodacom and MTN's investments in recent years. And I've got no doubt that that's the biggest reason for the price increase, to be able to fund that network investment.
And this will also definitely put customer loyalty to the test.
It will.
To see how much of their customers, or how many of their customers at least, you know, stick with them because they feel that they are the best operator, as opposed to just jumping based on price.
Well, maybe that's the important thing here. Maybe they feel that their customer service and their network quality has improved to the extent that they can withstand a price increase. And if that's the case, then fantastic. We'll know when we see the market share numbers during the course of this year. I hear anecdotally that Telkom's FreeMe plan is doing incredibly well and that they're taking customers from other networks. It wouldn't surprise me if that's the case. You know, Cell C increasing its prices suggests perhaps they have confidence in customers not churning away from them. So we'll have to watch the space. So that's Cell C. Our last story this week, and it's a big one, I guess, is the news that the iPhone is 10 years old.
Old double digits.
It's not quite 10 years old in that it was only released to consumers in June, in the US, in June of 2007. But sure, it was this week that Steve Jobs took to a stage in San Francisco and announced the details of the phone. And really shook up the mobile industry completely. And we're still feeling the aftershocks of that earthquake.
Yeah. I watched that keynote again, just parts of it. I was scrolling through the YouTube video of the keynote, and it was such a groundbreaking moment at the time. It was good to see Steve Jobs on the stage again, so to speak. What an iconic moment for the mobile industry.
It was a great presentation, actually. We posted the video again on Tech Central on the story we ran on it. If you want to see the video again, it's really worth watching again. It's in its entirety. It's a moment in history. And it's had a huge impact. And Rechad, you're an iPhone user. You've been an iPhone user for many years now, right?
Yeah, actually, well, I mean, not initially. I've only been for probably the last 4 years. Before that, it was Android all the time. I'm still a very, very happy iPhone user. I just think it's a solid device. The camera is great, and 128 gigabytes at my fingertips. I love it.
Oh, you've gone for the top end. But if you think about the impact, I mean, Microsoft, in those days, they had a fledgling operating system in what was it called then? Windows Mobile. That had the potential to own the market. Android hadn't even been launched yet. I think that was only launched a year later.
It's a scary thought.
There was no Android when the first iPhone came out. And now, of course, Android owns 90% of the smartphone market.
I think I was using an iMate SP3 at the time.
I remember that phone. I had one too.
That phone. It was brilliant. The little candy bar phone with the Windows operating system.
It was brilliant. It was made by... it was iMate, which eventually became HTC. What was my first iPhone? I think it was a 3GS. I think that was the first one that went on sale in South Africa, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, I think it was this. I got limited quantities, very expensive, and not easily to get.
I had the 3GS, and I think that was the last iPhone I owned as well. After that, I got an HTC Desire, and then I was stuck in Android. I'm a bit technology agnostic, but there are people who've upgraded every year to the iPhone since the original one, and won't get anything else. Won't entertain the thought of moving to another platform. And it's been hugely profitable for Apple. I mean, if you look at its share price over the last 10 years, it's gone up more than tenfold. Sure. It now has a market cap in excess of $600 billion. It has hundreds of billions of dollars of cash in the bank. And that's all on the back of the iPhone.
Yeah, that really made the company into another force to be reckoned with. I mean, you can almost say the MacBooks and the computer range was really off the back of their phone.
Yeah. Now the question is are the next 10 years for Apple going to look as positive?
Good question. I think they're going to have to keep reinventing, keep removing features from the device, and maybe we'll see that. But I think the next 10 years we're going to be seeing, and this is something just on a side note that I've seen a lot from CSs here, mixed reality and augmented reality. Everybody's going to get onto that bandwagon, and your mobile device is going to be the key part of it. You know, this little tiny computer in your pocket is going to enable so much on the augmented reality space. And
but Apple's not doing anything in AR.
I've heard some interesting rumors that they're doing some big work with Carl Zeiss, and I don't know what Carl Zeiss's.
They're going to do Google Glass, are they?
Well, I mean, the rumor has it that there's going to be a see-through iPhone in the near future that will obviously enable these technologies. I mean, it's speculation at this point, but.
Oh.
That would
look, I wouldn't put them down just yet. I think we've seen some interesting things from them.
Yeah.
And we'll continue to see that. But yeah, augmented reality.
To play devil's advocate for a bit. I mean, I've been reading a lot of skeptical articles and opinion pieces, especially coming out of the States in recent months, saying that Apple is forgetting to look after its core base, and that's the Mac user. They point to the Mac Pro.
The new one, yeah.
That hasn't been updated in 4 years. It was introduced in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
And because of its design, it's not easy to upgrade like the old Mac Pros used to be.
You're talking about the round cylindrical...
The round cylindrical... what would you call it?
Paperweight. It's not paperweight.
Very expensive paperweight. You know, in the old days, they produced those big silver boxes that you could open up and you could put new cards in, and
they were amazing machines.
They were great machines, but this new one is it's very expensive, first of all, but secondly, it's difficult to upgrade.
Well, it's not so new anymore, and they really haven't addressed that market.
No,
I mean, I guess on one end you can argue that they were focusing on the portable side of the computing, but even if you look at their new MacBooks. I mean, that a lot of people aren't MacBook Pros, with the touch bar. I mean, I wouldn't upgrade to that now because of the amount of missing ports. You know, you don't have your USB ports anymore. It's a bit of a big move. It was a bit of a big move for me, and I'm a bit worried about my upgrade path. Should I move on from this machine?
It was a very funny video I watched on YouTube the other day of someone saying the new MacBook Pro in 30 seconds. They took some masking tape and put it over the function keys.
I saw that.
They then took some masking tape and put it over the all the ports on the side and said, there you go, there's the new MacBook Pro. A bit cynical, but good for a laugh. But I think the other thing, the other challenge problem that Apple is facing is a resurgent Microsoft.
Mm.
The Surface Studio...
What a machine.
Is beautiful. It's damned expensive. It's starting at $3,000. But you've got this fantastic all-in-one that, frankly, to me, looks better than an iMac.
Mm.
Much better than an iMac.
Yeah.
And you've got these new Surface Book machines that reviewers are raving about. And Windows 10 is a great OS. I use it daily on multiple machines, and it's rock solid. And I don't want to compare it directly to Mac OS X because they're different operating systems, but it's just as rock solid as Mac OS X is.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly not the Windows 7 that we used to know, which is also a good operating system.
Not the Windows of your grandfather.
Yeah, exactly. Not Windows on the 8 SE.
Yes. Oh, God, that thing.
Millennium Edition.
Oh, my word. I remember upgrading to Millennium Edition. I struggled on with it for about 2 months and then went back to Windows 8.
I went to Windows 2000 from there, I think. I decided, screw this, I'm going to go to the server operating system.
Yes. Even though its interface wasn't as nice.
Yeah, but it was solid.
It was solid, yeah. In fact, it was Windows 2000 became Windows XP.
Yes, that's right. Good old days. But now the only thing we have to worry about is the hardware, you know, making sure that these manufacturers actually stick to the hardware that we need.
Yeah.
Without removing too many of those ports.
Yeah.
Well, I guess time will tell.
Yeah, so 10 years old, the iPhone, amazing. I'm really looking forward to seeing what they come up with this year. It's supposed to be a minor iteration year. We should be getting the 7S and the 7S Plus, but I have a feeling we're not. We're going to get the 8.
You think they're going to go straight to that?
I think so. Just by virtue of the fact that it's 10 years old. And... Everything is pointing to a very, very good Samsung Galaxy S8.
Okay.
All the rumors suggesting it's going to be the phone to beat.
Mm.
And I think they're going to have to beat it. So I don't think they can afford to do a point release on the new iPhone.
Yeah, I agree.
So when do they normally announce it? September time frame?
Yeah, end of the year.
Yeah. Gives them enough time to see what Samsung's up to and formulate a response. I must say the phone I'm looking forward to most this year is that Galaxy S8, especially after the Note 7 debacle. I think Samsung is going to double down on it.
They're going to go big.
For sure.
I'm not sure if I will move away from iPhone for that, but I'm really be keen to play with it.
Put it in my hands. The rumor is it's going to have its own virtual assistant, which is interesting.
Oh, nice.
Mainly because Google hasn't opened up its virtual assistant fully to other phone manufacturers. You can only get it on the Google Pixel. which I've heard has made Samsung rather annoyed.
Yeah, you'd wonder why they would want to do that. I mean, surely the strength of the operating system, or the whole idea behind Android, was to have the solid operating system across so many brands of devices.
Yeah. Well, I suppose Google is now a hardware maker, so we've got to weigh up, you know, do we keep back some of our functionality to drive our handset sales? I personally won't buy a Pixel. I think it's too expensive for what it is. I think it's a mistake to price it at the same level as the iPhone. I can see why they've done it. They want to try and eat into that hugely lucrative profit margin that Apple enjoys at the high end of the market.
But you don't get it on the first. You don't do it in the first go. I think you need to be priced slightly better than the iPhone, so that you know, Apple converts can have has a good enough reason to migrate to it, and existing Android users to upgrade to it.
But it's been an interesting year for phones. I see HTC has announced its new flagship called the HTC Ultra, HTC U Ultra. It's got fantastic specs, but it's really ugly.
HTC has really done some interesting, and I'm not saying in a positive way, made some interesting decisions over the last few years.
Yeah.
And I would love to root for them again, but they just haven't done anything to make me want to spend money with them. They used to have the best phones, in my opinion. And between probably some bad business decisions and some, you know, less and stellar performing devices in recent years, it's not the HTC that we used to know.
I found they've always done very good phones, especially in the Android space. I mean, you know, in those early days, the HTC Desire was a real competitor to the iPhone. That M lineup, the M7, 8, 9, and now the HTC 10, were great phones. I think HTC's problem is not that it's bad at coming up with excellent designs and technology and phones. Its problem is it doesn't know how to sell them.
Yeah.
Samsung, on the other hand, is brilliant at logistics and marketing and getting the phones in people's hands. You know that they're going to announce the S8. You know a month later it'll be in South Africa in stores.
Yeah.
The HTC, you don't know that.
And they also had too many products in their lineup, I always thought. You know, they wanted to, and especially if you look at the South African market, which is already a difficult market to get into in terms of the mobile space. I just had too many models, and it does confuse customers, but also the operators don't want to buy so many models, you know, unless you're the Samsung or the iPhones of the world.
That's true. Let's hope HTC has a better year. Any other phones that you're looking forward to? I mean, there's obviously the iPhone, the new Samsung. HTC no doubt will announce other models as well. Maybe the Pixel will come to South Africa this year, although I'm not holding out any hope. Huawei is an interesting one to watch. I think they're doing some interesting handsets. The Mate 9 has just been announced.
Oh, yes.
They've been making some great phones lately, actually. I think they deserve watching. The Moto Z is very good.
Yeah, that's a good one. I'd love to see the new Nokias.
Of course. The HPD venture. Yeah. The first one looks a bit underwhelming, but it's not really a top-end phone. Which other manufacturers are worth keeping an eye on? Pretty much counted it. Sony, there's always Sony.
Sony, yeah.
I'm a bit disappointed in Sony lately, actually.
You used to love their phones last year.
I did. Wow. I've had a couple of problematic phones lately from them. Problems with screens and stuff. Faulty hardware, which you really shouldn't expect from Sony.
Yeah.
Their cameras are fantastic. I think they challenged the iPhone head-on in the camera department. A bit confused about their naming strategy for their products as well. I mean, they had the Xperia Z, which was their top-end phone, and they said, well, we're not going to make the Z series anymore. Then they introduced the Xperia X, which was, is this the new high-end phone? It's certainly not cheap. It's got high-end specs in it. It's a bit small. And then they introduced the Xperia XZ.
Oh, my word.
You know, who came up with this? It's just going to confuse the market. I mean, what is this XZ? What is an X? What is a Z? Keep your naming conventions. Z was the premium phone. Keep that lineup. I mean, the Z2 and the Z3 were brilliant devices. The Z5, I think, wasn't enough of a differentiator from the Z3 to really... it was a great phone, but it didn't differentiate itself enough from the Z3 to really get the market to sit up and take notice. But I do think they should have continued with that Z line. It was a line that the market understood. And
it was established.
It was.
People got it, yeah.
Mm. So now you've got the XZ and the X, but no Z.
We need to talk to these guys about naming convention. I think that's where the iPhone got it right. I mean, you know where you stand in the lineup, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder when Apple's going to drop the numbers from its iPhones like they did with the iPad.
Do you think they'll skip 8 to 9 and go straight to 10 for the 10-year anniversary?
Maybe they'll probably just call it iPhone.
No, iPhone. Yeah, but if you look at what it did to the iPad, I mean, iPad became a bit confusing because they dropped it and you didn't know, never knew which one you had. Was it fourth generation, third generation?
Yeah.
I still don't know which one I actually have. I just know when I bought it.
Yes.
Yeah, crazy world we live in.
It was a bit silly to do that, actually. It became a bit like the Mac lineup where you had to say, I have a MacBook Pro Q3 2013 edition.
The only way you could figure out is by going to that specific website where you put in your serial number and it tells you which edition.
Which model you have, yeah. It does tell you if you go into the. Anyway, let's move on to our regular features. The storm is getting closer, so we should probably get a move on. our winner this week, I'm not going to dwell on it because we've just spent a considerable amount of time talking about it, and that's Apple.
Yeah.
Just for 10 years of the iPhone. I think you know, we can be critical of Apple and ask where they're going and suggest they've lost focus on their core businesses, on their traditional core businesses, but there's no doubt that the iPhone has been the consumer electronic success of the past decade, and it's created an enormous amount of wealth for the company, and they continue to ride that wave. So they're our winner of for this week, and probably winner of the decade. Our loser this week is an organization called POTRAS. You've probably never heard of them. They are the Postal and Telecommunications Regulator of Zimbabwe.
What?
They're Zimbabwe's ICASA. Now, they pushed up, they implemented something called telecommunications floor pricing in Zimbabwe this week, which basically said that the operators are not allowed to charge less than a certain amount for data and voice. And as a result, Econet Wireless, the biggest operator in Zimbabwe, immediately put its prices up massively. And we're talking prices that are well in excess of the prices that the operators here charge. The regulator said that they had to do this to protect the operators from unwarranted competition.
Oh, no.
I think it's David Coltart, a opposition senator in Zimbabwe, tweeted that, and he wasn't the only one. There were plenty of people who said this, that this was a move by the Zimbabwean government to try and suppress social media, especially in following the This Flag protests that erupted last year against the Zimbabwean government. Anyway, the net result of all of this is there was a huge uproar in the country, and they late last night, Thursday night, announced that they were reversing their decision. The telecommunications ICT minister has stepped in and basically ordered the regulator to back down. What's ironic is the government probably ordered it in the first place.
Yeah.
But they backtrack now, and Econet is supposed, I guess, going to reduce its rates again. Econet was the only one who put up its rates. The other two operators kept their rates at the level they were. Econet said it was simply complying with the law, which sounds fair enough. But prices coming back down again. So I guess a victory for the Zimbabwean consumer doesn't exactly leave the regulator there in a good light. So there are losers this week. POTRAS. Richard, what's your pick?
So, you know, at the end, towards the end of every year, you kind of do your annual purge, you know, reinstall your computer, maybe move around some things, archive some other things. And at the end of last year, I was, I've got on my 512 gigabyte notebook here, which is virtually filled up. I had to move some files around, back up some things. And I found a very cool application called Daisy Disk.
Oh, yeah.
Only $10 if you want to buy the full version. But it is such an incredible application to dissect where your data is on your drive. And it does so in a very nice little chart or color chart. And I feel like you can see this, Duncan. It's like a little round circle with various colors arced out into various kind of data archives, I guess. And you can click on any part and see where your biggest data is being used. So I can see under my user folder and under my Rechot folder, that's where the most data is. My Dropbox folder is 84 gigs, desktop is 66 gigs, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So I can actually drill down, see where my big files are, move them out, archive them. And it's a very cool way, a very nice way of managing your data and seeing where those large files on your hard drive are residing so that you can eliminate them if you need to. You know, every now and then you get a large file, maybe a big video file of 10 gigs, you forgot where it is or you forgot it's there, and those kind of things char up your space.
Yeah.
And I absolutely love this, and I now use it, you know, every few days or every few weeks just to check if there's, you know, just to kind of go in and see if anything has changed once I've started moving files around. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very handy application, and I highly recommend it. DaisyDiskApp.com. There's a free trial, but definitely worth
Mac
$10.
Only?
From what I can see, yes, only Mac. Mac OS. Let me just check. I didn't see a Windows version.
Yeah, that looks Mac OS.
No, this is Mac only.
Yeah, I must say, well, since I've got fiber at home, I've pushed a lot of my stuff that was on my hard drive into the cloud.
Yeah.
All my pictures. All my music, which I don't really listen to anymore because I stream it through Google Play Music. But a lot of my content, I simply dump in the cloud now. You know, my photos on my phone even.
Yeah.
Google Photos syncs automatically when I plug my device in. And once it has synced successfully to the cloud, it deletes them off my phone. So I never run out of space on my phone.
It's like Solaris version, if I remember correctly.
So
you can access, you can see the photo, and then when you open it, it pulls it from the cloud. Yeah.
Oh, right. Okay, that makes sense. You know, you don't. Photos are the things that on phones that end up clogging up all the space.
Yeah. And I've got 5 years worth of photos on my phone,
If you use Google Photos, there's an option in the settings to auto delete the photos
that
have uploaded onto Google Drive, which is I find very useful. In fact, I back up all my photos through to both Google Drive and OneDrive, in case one of them goes down, because I don't want to lose my pictures.
Mm.
I don't imagine that that both OneDrive and Google Drive will explode at the same time.
yeah, no, definitely. You'll be fine with one of them.
But you know, I don't sync much from those. I don't have a live sync to my desktop machines of much of that's in the cloud. My work documents and my Word files mainly. I keep in sync, so they're available when I'm offline. But my photos, my music, I've got a lot of backed up media in the cloud. I don't bother to keep it locally anymore because I can just stream it.
Yeah, no.
Or download it on demand.
No, for sure. Yeah. I just have a lot of large files that I'm actively working on that I need.
Okay.
And I guess the other thing with Dropbox, I mean, all my stuff is in Dropbox, but if you want a local version, you can uncheck it to unsync it.
Mm-hmm.
It's still on the cloud, but it's not showing up on your desk, on your computer.
Yeah.
So I just periodically move those things into folders that are archived that are not available on my machine.
Okay. My next project is to put a server in my home and connect it to the fiber and create my own personal cloud.
That's backed up online somewhere.
That's probably synced with a OneDrive or something, but it's my own personal backup at home that I can connect to and access all my media on the go as well, which I can really do with Plex, which is fantastic software if you pay the annual license fee.
But fiber does go to show yet again how amazing it is to have the bandwidth, the capacity at your fingertips,
exactly,
to push these things up.
It's amazing, absolutely amazing. And it's been interesting to see how. I mean, I've got the 100 megabit per second symmetrical service, and it's quite thrilling to watch how quickly you can upload stuff.
Yeah.
What I find interesting is though, uploading to OneDrive is a lot slower than uploading to Google Drive. When I upload to Google Drive, it uploads at full 100 megs a second, which suggests there's a local server. When I do it to OneDrive, it only goes up at about a tenth of the line speed.
You know, OneDrive has always had this weird little kink that I'd never appreciated. I'm not a big fan of their software, but yeah, it's always been slow for me.
It is. It's weird that it's slow though, because I presume Microsoft uses Akamai technologies. They must use Akamai to manage the stuff. So I don't know why it's so slow, but Google is clearly doing something right in terms of local bandwidth.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, my pick this week is an audiobook. I haven't picked an audiobook in ages, and it's a thrilling book, very funny as well. It's science fiction, so if you're a sci-fi fan, you'll really enjoy this. It's got a very strange title. It's called We Are Legion, We Are Bob by Dennis E. Taylor, and I'm going to read the synopsis of this book because it's worth reading. I think it'll grab you if you're a sci-fi fan. Bob Johansson has just sold his software company and is looking forward to a life of leisure. There are places to go, books to read, and movies to watch. So it's a little unfair when he gets himself killed crossing the street. Bob wakes up a century later to find that corpsicles, him in other words, his frozen self, have been declared to be without rights, and he is now the property of the state.
He has been uploaded into computer hardware and is slated to be the controlling artificial intelligence in an interstellar probe looking for habitable planets. Jeez. The stakes are high, no less than the first claim to entire worlds. If he declines the honor, he'll be switched off, and they'll try again with someone else. If he accepts, he becomes a prime target. There are at least three other countries trying to get their own probes launched first, and they play dirty. The safest place for Bob is in space, heading away from the Earth at top speed. Or so he thinks, because the universe is full of nasties, and trespassers make them mad, very mad.
Oh, wow. Now I want to read this.
It's a brilliant book. I'm on the last few chapters, and I've loved it throughout. It's got fantastic humor. It reads like a thriller. It's fantastic sci-fi. He's, you know, it's exploration of new worlds. What to love about it?
Sure,
yeah, no, and it's got intergalactic warfare built into it as well. Interstellar warfare, rather. Fantastic book. It's got a very strange title, but it's book one in a series, apparently, called The Bobbyverse. We Are Legion, We Are Bob, and it's written by a guy called Dennis E. Taylor. I believe it's his first ever book.
Wow.
And I'm listening to the audio version from Audible, which is really good. I highly recommend it. Narrated by Ray Porter. But if you're a sci-fi nut and you haven't read this book, do yourself a favor and either go grab a printed version of it, or do what I've done and grab the very well-read Audible edition.
Nice.
Cool. That's my pick. And that is our show. Apart from our quiz results, let me jump in with the first question, Rechot. Yahoo, or what is left of it after its US assets assault of Verizon, is being renamed to what? And the answer is Altaba.
The second question, Yahoo's new name is a portmanteau of which two words? And the answer, alternative and Alibaba.
And the reason for that is that Alibaba is one of the few and only one of only two investments that Yahoo is going to be left with after the sale of the US assets, the other being Yahoo Japan. So they see this vehicle now as a listed alternative investment for shareholders interested in buying Alibaba, so hence Altaba, alternative Alibaba. Our third question, South Africa's Department of Telecommunications and Postal Services has a new director general. Who is he? And it is, of course, Mabuse Robert Mkuna.
The fourth question, who was acting DG until the person who is the answer to question three took over? The answer, Joe Mkhwaha.
And our final question, Cell C this week announced it would hike tariffs on the 1st of February. What did it cite as the main reason for being forced to do so? And the answer, the weak rand pushing up network equipment costs. And that's our show, the first show of 2017. We've got lots of great stuff planned for this podcast this year. So keep your ears peeled, if that's the right phrase. we will be back with plenty more throughout 2017. As always, we would love to get your feedback. Our email address for that is info@techcentral.co.za. Until next time, from Rechot and myself, cheers.
Ciao, ciao. We'll be right back.